It is MEA weekend, so we are taking advantage of an opportunity we have here to chat with Stan Kusinoki, who is a teacher and also a published poet. Stan is a high-potential elementary teacher at Red Oak Elementary in Shakopee. He is also a poet and a former radio producer. He has recently published a book of his poems and some of his students' poetry called 180 Days, Reflections and Observations of a Teacher. He joins us now in the studio to discuss his interesting work. Stan Kusinoki, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Hey, Dickens and Dave, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. We're looking forward to it. I read your book today and the poetry and also the acknowledgement at the end. And I see from that you transitioned from a poet in the schools to a teacher who is also a poet. Tell us about that.
Well, right. And as we were talking beforehand, I was just saying I've had a lot of friends who happen to be women who've really kicked my butt when I needed it. And this was Mary Jo Thompson was a teaching poet, and I was doing some workshops with her. And she said, you know, you seem to really like the teaching part as well as the writing part. So why don't you just become a teacher? And I went, well, you know, I'd have to go back to school and it'd be a lot of extra work, and I'm not ready to do that. And she mentioned that there was this program at University of St. Thomas called the Collaborative Urban Educator, and it was competitive. You had to apply to get in. And I said, oh, well, I'm not going to get in. And she said, well, just go for it. And my wife said, yeah, go for it. And so lo and behold, I got in, and the cool thing was you not only got certified as a teacher, but you were like halfway to getting a master's by the time you got done with the program. It was the most intense 13 months of my life.
What education did you study? I mean, was it elementary education?
Elementary education.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
And poetry included, or you were a poet before
you became
a teacher.
Right. And so the poetry informs some of the things I do with my students. You know, I teach writing and English and math. And, you know, it comes out sometimes in the math. You know, the kids in math don't like to write, but they have word problems to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so to figure out exactly, you know, wait a minute, what is actually being asked?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to kind of break down the questions, and sometimes poetry helps. It also helps, the kids will tell you, oh, no, he's going to do it. But for some concepts like the coordinate grid, I do a rap. And I have them all get up, and you move, and you jump, and you do whatever. And what they don't understand is it's getting... The rap is something that they'll remember, but it's also getting their whole body involved.
Oh, sure.
With the lesson. And so
it's
not just a mental memory, it's a body memory.
Yeah, that's pretty rare in school, although in elementary probably more than in secondary education. The kids move more.
Right. Oh, sometimes they move more. A lot of times they move a lot more than I want to.
Just briefly, what is a high-potential elementary teacher?
Yeah, I don't like that term because, mm-hmm. of course, all kids have potential.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do is it's a pull-up program, and it's not a truly gifted program. Gifted is, you know, the top 1 or 2%, and they just have this intense focus.
Mm-hmm.
This is more the high achievers, so it's the top 5 to 10%,
mm-hmm.
for reading and math, and that still keeps me on my toes. I had a fifth grader last year that was doing quadratic equations, and I'm going, okay, we're past where I'm real comfortable. Let's explore together on the computer here.
Let's do some poetry instead. All right. In addition to writing poems, you've said that you use poetry with your students. How do you use poetry in the classroom other than a rap?
Well, you know, especially with writing, You're trying to get the kids to be more expressive. And so the figurative language that's in poetry kind of gets them thinking about, okay, how can I make what I'm writing more vivid? And I have a little thing called the Poet's Toolkit. And it really is, I said, you have five things that you carry around with you all the time. And, of course, it comes out that it's the five senses. And so I really want to get them to use sensory detail when they write. And I have a lesson that I use with sometimes with the third grade. It's I call it the space alien dude, and he's real interested in all things Earth. And he's very sensual, but he has no tongue, so he can't taste. And I have them pick a taste before I tell them about this. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, now you have to describe this taste using the other four senses. Mm-hmm. And they kind of look like a deer in headlights for a while, and then they start to get it. You know, yeah. Okay, what color would this taste be? What sound would it make? Would it be Dolly Parton? Would it be, mm-hmm. you know, whoever? And would it be heavy metal? And so once they start to roll with it, then they understand that, hey, we're free to make all kinds of associations.
And that's what poetry is. You have taught in, as I understand from your background that I've read about, you've taught in the inner city as well as in the suburbs. And I wonder if you see any difference in how you use poetry in an inner city setting as opposed to the suburban kids.
You know, not really. I think the kids anywhere love when you are able to attach writing with what they're actually experiencing with their senses. And so I use the same kind of lessons and activities mm-hmm. wherever I go. And interestingly enough, it gets the same kind of results.
Yep, that's cool. How has writing your own poetry helped you or informed your activities as a teacher?
Ooh, I haven't thought about that. I think having had to go through the process of trying to get the word succinct and poetic helps me when I'm working with the students. You know, I can understand where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. A lot of them go, I hate poetry. I don't want to write this. But you can say, well, but it's all about giving someone you don't know the experience that you're having with whatever subject it is. And so once you can get them to wrap their mind around that, mm-hmm. okay, I want someone else to feel what I'm feeling or to sense what I'm feeling or to smell what I'm feeling, or to find this vile revulsion of poetry, but get it down and express it so that your audience knows the same thing.
And also, clearly, the poems that you have in your collection here show a lot of your fondness for teaching and for the students that you've taught over the years. So that's got to feel good to be able to write about that.
Well, you know,
to express that feeling.
I talked, and I'm feeling old now because some of the kids I started with in second grade have been graduating from high school over the last few years, and I still think of them as my kids, you know. Mm-hmm. And the thing I love about my current principal, if he's listening in, is that he got, when we first talked, he said, it's all about the kids, and if you're not doing things for the kids, then why are we doing it? And so that has informed not only my teaching, but how I think about them when I'm writing.
Have you seen, well, I was thinking of what you were just saying about one of your poems is about kids in high school that you taught as elementary students, and they see you and, I really haven't written any poems lately, but they clearly remember that. Experience.
And you have to, part of the thing with watching them is they change. And I'd still like to think of them as my own, but they've gone through so many changes from fifth grade through high school.
Sure.
And it's interesting and fun for me to see them and for them to tell me where they've gone and how they've taken the pieces that mm-hmm. we had when we were together and mm-hmm. formed it into something completely new.
Okay, folks, if you've just joined us, this is WTIP. You're listening to The Roadhouse. I'm Dick Swanson, and we're talking with Stan Kusinoki, who's a teacher and a poet in the Shakopee school system. He's talking about the use of poetry in the classroom and his own poetry reflecting on his career as a teacher. I thought, Stan, we should look at some examples of what you call, in the title of your book, Reflections and Observation, your poetry book, which we'll tell folks about where to get it. Now, it's entitled 180 Days, Reflections and Observations of a Teacher. You open with this book, with this poem I think is pretty powerful right away, called Vessels. And, of course, that's referencing the kids as right. Your students. I wonder if you want to read any of the poems, including that one, and then talk about it?
Sure. Vessels, I was writing, this was part of when I was a part of the Q program that I mentioned, is that you had to agree to teach inner city. And I taught at Dayton's Bluff, which was one of the notoriously tough schools in St. Paul. There was a crack house across the street. There was gunfire during the day. Mm. And so I understood that I was not just a teacher. I was the representative of the safe haven. And as long as they were with me, I was their teacher, but also, their counselor and their protector. Mm-hmm. And a lot of kids didn't have fathers. In fact, in one of the poems, Claudia, my wife, calls them my barnacles, because you could tell the ones that didn't have dads because they glommed on, they were just hugging my leg from the moment I walked into the classroom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But so Vessels is a reflection of the different students that I see, but all of them have something to offer. So I'll read that since you brought it up. And interestingly, it wasn't really a graduation, but the celebration of passing through the Q program. This happened to be part of the program. So, mm-hmm. Vessels. They come to us empty vessels. It is our job to fill them with the pressings of our feet and hands, our sweat wrung from sheaves of paper and blackboard scratching, the memory of those who worked this vineyard before us, whose vintage we blend with our own to pour into open brims. Some are cut glass. They take the wine and shine. Their own alchemy golden reflects and glows on our faces. Some are Libby glass, resilient but plain. They too sparkle as we open new vintages to keep them filled with wonder. Even jam jars can catch light, hold our labor's offerings. Then there are those like Jaime, Chantel, who have been dropped and tossed and left in the alley. Each lesson hemorrhages through kaleidoscope cracks and chips. We wonder they hold anything at all. And after ladle upon ladle, rivulets across the floor, we understand only an eyedropper will do. And so by ladle or by drop, these vessels grow while the glassblower waits for us to remember that glassware can be reformed and made whole.
Yeah, that's a very nice metaphor there. and clearly, that's a different experience than you're having in the Shakopee school right now.
Everyone assumes that because I'm in the suburbs and I'm teaching the high-level kids that they don't have baggage. It's different baggage. But they all come with their own problems and their own things that we have to work through. And so as a teacher, I'm still a little bit of a counselor and a little bit of a guide, and certainly I like to think of myself still as kind of a protective person in their lives.
And it's nice to think of that initial poem as one of your early experiences as a teacher, because and obviously writing about it the way you have has to have reinforced you in what you were doing.
Oh, yeah. It even in Shakopee, where I am now, you know, you do have to look at each child as a singular individual, and they bring strengths, but they also bring certain needs, and so yes, so there's still cut glass and there's still Libby jars, and mm-hmm. you do the best to fill them up and make them feel as successful as you can.
And you also in your book here have examples of poems that your students have written, and you mentioned to me that you'd like to read one of those.
Yeah, it's a Japanese tradition, but I think a lot of cultures do this, where the teacher or the mentor includes some of the protege's work mm-hmm. in their own work. And mm-hmm. so I wanted to carry on that tradition in this book. Mm-hmm. One of the things that makes me delighted every year is I get to go to the Young Authors Conference, which is at Bethel University, and oh, the kids are great. We get to go to a college, and I get to take 15 kids from the fourth and fifth grade together. And so the poem I'm going to read is actually one of the poems that qualified this girl to go. And this was written by Emily, who at the time was a fifth grader. And so we know Brooklyn, but this is called Brooklyn. Brooklyn. My poetry takes me to many amazing places, but my favorite place of all is Brooklyn, the land of books. It's kind of like a library, except with no shelves, and books are larger than men, and there are sofas and beanbags, and in the center of the room there is a fireplace where everyone can gather and tell stories. Here your senses are more alive. You can smell the hot cocoa and the wood fire burning, and you can see the words on the page, feel the pages turning. You can taste the hot cocoa and the smoke in the air. You can feel the warmth, the fire, the blankets, the hot cocoa. Anyone who loves to read can come here and enjoy the peace and quiet. Here, everything is magical. No one has to do anything but read on and on, and nothing can bother them, pesky little brothers or barking dogs. This place is all I need. The peace, the quiet, everything is perfect.
And so, that's great.
Yeah, and you can tell that Emily took the writer's toolkit to heart there, because she had all the senses involved.
That's great. And I wish we had time to read more, but we're running short on time. I mean, I was touched by the poems you wrote about after the September 11th. Obviously, you were teaching in an elementary school at the time of the September 11th tragedy, and how do you protect the kids from it? I thought the poem Mealyworms, that where you talk about a child who you thought was crushed by the depression of the September 11th, but it was really about the mealyworm that she was trying to raise that had died.
Right.
That was clever. Insight into children, I think. Well, it's a wonderful book, and obviously you've had a great career, and I wish you all the luck, all the best for the future, and keep writing the poems. I wonder if you could tell our listeners where they can find your book.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Gwen and Jane down at Drury Lane Books here in Grand Marais. Obviously, this was kind of a spur of the moment idea, and they rolled with it. And so I have signed copies of the book there this weekend.
Very good. Excellent. Well, Stan Kusinowski, thank you so much for joining us. I wish we had more time, but we've had a good discussion, and I appreciate very much you being here.